Hi and welcome to The Chat. My name is Leah Tsumoglu. Each week on The Chat, we shine a light on the lives and careers of UTS alumni here at the 2SER studios. This week, my guest on the show is James Gulliver Hancock. He's an illustrator and he's released several books, most notably All the Buildings in New York and The Travel Bug. James is also the artist in residence this month at Rose Sidler House. Let's have a listen to his story.
Tell me about your childhood. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Sydney, in Balmain. Yeah. And my parents aren't particularly creative. My mum's a psychologist, dad's a solicitor, and I don't know where my creative bent came from. Maybe some distant cousins. But I was always drawing and stuff with myself and with my brother and stuff.
Actually, did you hang out with like that Balmain crew though? I think I heard that in the interview.
Yeah.
That you did with Barry. So you know, like Josh Pike, and did you grow up with like Holly Throsby and all those musician people?
So Balmain, it was kind of like an idyllic little inner city village, you know, because it's a peninsula. I had like a street, and every friend was on every street, you know. So Josh Pike was around the corner near my primary school, and then another friend was down the road. And yeah, Holly Throsby worked in the video shop, and you know, it was kind of hilarious.
That's lovely. It's like a hub of creative activity from back in the, when, like 80s, 90s era?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice. And is Gulliver your middle name?
Yeah.
Where did it come from?
Everyone thinks so. I even thought it came from Gulliver's Travels, the famous book. But I later found out that my dad named me after a film that he'd seen called The Horse's Mouth with Alec Guinness. And the character in that's called Gully Jimson. So Gulliver James, and he switched it around to be James Gulliver.
That's lovely.
But he's still a traveling kind of vagabondy kind of character, but way more, he's an artist basically, and Gulliver's in Gulliver's Travels just insane.
And what were you like as a child? Were you always drawing? There's a story I read that when you're in kindergarten that you became fixated in drawing this complex image and you had to put everything in it. Could you explain what?
Yeah, I mean, I remember in preschool you had like activities, you know, you got to do a bit of puzzles, a bit of I don't know, connecting things, and then do a bit of whatever else, and there was a drawing station, and I just discovered that and didn't want to do anything else, so I just came up with the most complex thing I could think of, which was the sort of cross section of this village and all the people inside and the spiders between it and the foundations underneath, and therefore, I could just draw all day and I didn't have to do anything else. I'm still using that technique to this day. I just draw complicated things so I don't have to do anything else.
Do you still have that drawing from kindergarten, from preschool?
It's somewhere in my mum's attic. I haven't found it yet. I've dug a few times, but it requires a full attic, you know, reshuffle to find it.
And so from like all throughout primary school, high school, did you ever think that you'd, were you pretty much like on the path, you were like, I'm going to be an artist, I'm going to be an illustrator? Is that what you always had in mind, or did you think, oh, I might become an architect or a lawyer or something? Was it always, were you always fixated on drawing?
Yeah, I always knew it was visual. You know, I really enjoyed drawing. I'd always like copy Garfield cartoons and trace, you know, BMW logos and stuff. And I did lots of that stuff in high school. You know, I chose to do like tech drawing and engineering science, anything that involved a pencil somehow. Even sort of physics and engineering sort of went that way a bit. You know, you have to sort of draw planes and things.
Of course.
So there was sort of a period where I did go to Sydney Uni and look at the aerospace sort of, you know, engineering-y kind of vibes.
Oh, nice. Interesting. The,
what's it called? The, when the wind goes over things. Aerodynamics and that kind of thing was interesting to me. I'm still interested in that, and I do a lot of kids' books now about that, which is funny. But I didn't really know illustration was a thing that you could do as a career, you know?
Yeah.
I didn't sort of put two and two together with kids' books and stuff.
Of course.
So that didn't come until after university. You know, I knew I really wanted to do be at UTS and do VizCom. That was my drive, and luckily I got in. It was great. I just had something to work towards and got there, which was awesome.
Why this particular course, visual communications at
I think because it was broad, you know. It wasn't like graphic design or just photography or just visual art, you know. You could do all of those things, and I even did some electives at COFA while I was here, you know, and skipped over there and did really free drawing and stuff and blew everyone's mind over there because I thought about it quite differently as a designer. But yeah, it was just that flexibility of all visual things in one, which is really what I knew I wanted to get into. And it wasn't until like 5 years after uni that I just focused on illustration. I always did like animation and web design and everything.
Oh, we'll talk about a little bit about that later. What about your parents? Did they encourage you to pursue art? Did they discourage? They didn't say, you know, you're never going to find a job as an artist.
No, they didn't. Definitely didn't. I feel like they didn't discourage or encourage. Yeah. They were just great parents. You know, that's like I've got a 5-year-old now, and I think we're the same. You know, it's just they do a drawing and it's awesome. You say it's awesome. You don't go, oh, don't do that drawing. Drawing's a waste of time. You know, they were just like that, and I think I just had a drive to do it. You know, I just wanted to make things and show things to people.
Tell me about your time at UTS. Do you have any particular memories, or is it strange being back here as well, as a tutor?
Yeah, definitely strange. It's, you know, a lot of it's the same, but a lot of it's very different. You know, buildings have changed and stuff, but. You know, the way they teach and the course VizCom that I'm in, it still has that feeling of you don't really know what you're doing, but you're doing something awesome. you know what I mean? Sometimes, especially first year that I'm teaching, it's quite fluid and organic. We sort of spend a lot of time trying to explain what we're trying to teach, but
and a lot of the
that's what I remember the most, being amazing.
And a lot of the architecture has changed a little bit as well since.
Yeah, definitely. Lots of exciting buildings and things.
Have you sketched some of it, like the...
Yeah, I went down and did the Gary one and stuff.
Yeah. And when you received the university medal, that's very impressive. Congratulations.
I guess. I mean, I feel like it's maybe a bit more relevant to someone doing something super technical like heart surgery or something. You know, you're going to be the heart surgeon. When it's something creative, it's sure, it's a reward for being quite conscientious and stuff, which I was. And I've sort of used that in my career, that level of obsession of doing things. You know, I don't sort of... do things by halves. You know, if I get a project, I make like a massive amount of material to use within that project. It's not like I just do one drawing and give it to the client. Mm-hmm. So it's that, I think it's that, it was maybe a reward for that kind of level of focus that's just innate in me. I guess that's my talent, I suppose.
You're most known for your illustrations of buildings, like the terraces and brownstones. We'll talk about the book that you published, All the Buildings in New York, in a minute. But I wanted to start by asking you about the buildings that you choose to draw. A lot of them are residential sort of apartment buildings. Why? What is it about these buildings that attract you to it?
Well, the whole project started in New York when I was living there, and I really wanted to understand that place better. Like, we moved there, and it's hard not to just be a tourist and just walk around going, oh my God, all the time, you know? So I really wanted to sort of stop. Like, we were there for sort of 2 and a bit years in the end, and I wanted to be able to soak in as much as possible. And taking photos or just being in wonder all the time doesn't really help that. So sitting and drawing in front of places was a way to really ingrain myself in the place. And I didn't want to just draw, like I did draw the Chrysler and the Empire State and all that, but I also wanted to focus on the places people live, the everyday, you know, the corner stores and little funny restaurants that I went to and friends' houses. So I really had a real map of the place, you know, and the books sort of reflect that too. I try to get half famous and half non-famous buildings, you know.
Yeah.
So it's meant to be like a diary kind of thing.
Of
really.
Course. Yeah. What is it about New York that you can't find anywhere else in the world, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I was going to say density off the cuff, but there's a lot of other dense places, but they're also exciting. You know, like you think of Hong Kong or, I don't know, Paris is pretty dense. Lots of other Chinese cities are massively dense too. We've been to Shanghai recently. That was the same. And they have the similar kind of level of experience where the minute you step out, it's fascinating. You know, you could almost just not even take any steps and just stand there and be in awe. Like, whereas if you go to somewhere like LA or, you know, a lot of parts of Sydney, you step out your door and it's like you might see one grandma with a shopping cart walk past in an hour, you know.
Yeah.
It's not that amazing. I mean, you can pull amazingness out of that, but New York and other places that have that density are just sort of in your face straight away. It's kind of amazing.
Do you have a favorite building in New York?
No. You know, whatever I'm in front of at the time, you know, you fall in love with the thing that you're drawing, even if it's not a building, you know, if you're drawing a bus or a trash can or a bicycle, you know, I feel that there's a pretty intimate relationship between you and the thing while you're drawing it. And buildings are like that too. They're so full of character, especially brownstones and terraces and stuff.
Absolutely. And are you drawn to particular buildings by, say, an era? Like, do you like the Art Deco or the modernist style or is it just...
Yeah, I mean, when I started the project, I was totally into Art Deco and stuff, you know, and things with a lot of funny little details, you know, and especially when you draw like a brownstone or like a terrace here, even if they're repeated, there's different details on each one, you know, that when you start drawing it, you see they're all slightly different and they each have a little character. But as I drew more and more buildings, I came to be more interested in architecture, I guess. And things like brutalism, which people tend to hate, became quite fascinating to me. And that sort of, its part in sort of the city planning was kind of fascinating, how they messed with that a bit, and it makes you feel uncomfortable. My understanding and appreciation of architecture has grown by drawing it.
And did you ever take like photos of buildings and then draw them later, or do you have to always be there in the moment?
I do both.
Illustrating,
It's nice to stand in front of things, but it's sometimes it's hard when it's snowing or, you know, you have to go somewhere with your five-year-old or whatever. You just snap something on your phone and draw it later. Or even just remember the place and look it up on the internet later. You know, there's almost like a picture of every building in the world now, it seems like.
That's true.
And there is on Google Maps, obviously, but even other photos, it's pretty easy to virtually walk around anywhere now.
And your style is very sort of animated, the way that you capture these buildings. How has that developed over time? Is it sort of been consistent throughout?
Yeah. I mean, I've always had even back in high school when I was doing the technical drawing thing, I always wanted to fold that in with being really messy, you know. It's sort of a bit of both. So my drawings of buildings are definitely a little bit wabi-sabi, if you know that Japanese ceramics term, where there's nothing should be perfect, you know. It's all got to have a little bit of wobble to it. So I think that's kind of always been a core belief of mine, whether I do it just unconsciously or not, I don't know.
Is that why you don't think you studied architecture?
Yeah, precise. I mean, I could have gone there, but I think I would have maybe had a few more psychological issues drawing straight lines all day. I wouldn't have had the little bit of funk in there that means it's a bit more true to the self, you know.
But you are interested in architecture. That's what's really fascinating about
it. And
you.
Architects love my drawings too.
Yeah,
you know?
I can imagine.
It's sort of a reinterpretation of it.
Have you collaborated with architects before in the past?
I've done drawings for them. I don't know if we've really collaborated. Yeah. I mean, I've done some like artist impressions, that kind of vibe stuff. But yeah, I don't know. I'd never want to give one of my drawings to a builder or anything.
No.
Maybe me and Gaudi's builders or something.
Yeah, I was about to say,
you know?
It could be
do
a Gaudi.
A bit wonky, it'd be all right.
Also, I want to talk about your use of typography in your illustrations. Mm. It's kind of the playful style of your illustrations. How's that adapted over time? Do you think the typography is like as important as the illustration?
Yeah, I mean, the drawing typography really came out of fearing choosing type. You know, you start to go, I need a font to write this letter.
Fair enough.
And you go down the list, and it's like, oh my God, there's just, you start, oh, that one looks right, that one looks all right too. And you just, it's infinite, it feels like. So I just started drawing them because then it's, you own it straight away. You know, it's my handwriting, it's my thing, and it fits in with my drawing. You know, you don't have to sort of fit the type you find with your drawing. But yeah, I think type is really important to communicate it too, just keeping it all in the same world. And playing with fonts is just fun. I've always traced fonts as a kid and stuff.
Do you think it can hinder an image sometimes, or do you work with it in the way that it's always
having
sort of
information on the page, I mean?
Yeah, but also that it could either take away from the image or that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, the minute you put type on something, people read it.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, whereas if you don't, they're forced to sort of draw, pull out of the image whatever they can. And I do both, you know. Sometimes I do drawings and it's just the image, and sometimes I do a drawing and there's heaps of type around, lots of information. You know, I've done these explanatory ones about architecture types in Sydney, like terrace houses, semi-detached houses, different types, and it's got, you know, where they came from and how they got developed in their time period and why and things like that. And I think that information's really interesting because you can't access that just looking on the street.
Absolutely. And your maps as well.
And that fits into, it's all sort of educational in a way, you know, fun educational.
Yeah.
I'm really into that, you know, like especially for any age group too, you know, from kids doing little flat books to adult textbooks that have more interesting graphs that I've illustrated and make them want to engage with them, you know.
And essentially it's visual communications.
Yeah,
that's
totally. That's
exactly
what it comes
what
down
it is.
To.
Yeah.
I love doing diagrams. You know how I did a bicycle book recently, how to change a flat tire, and it's like arrows going to certain things and look at this and don't do that. And you can say there's like layers of information. You can read the text and get detailed information. You can see where the hand goes on the tire through the illustration. And, yeah.
That's great. How long does it take you to draw, say, for example, like one of the buildings? And how do you work? Are you sort of, is it a combination of like hand drawing and Wacom? Or how do you, what's your process?
It's usually really rough at the beginning if I'm doing stuff that has to be quite finished at the end, like for a client or whatever. Yeah. So I'll do a rough idea and we'll talk about it and then I'll sort of refine it up. But when I'm doing like something for me, like a building drawing, I'll just go straight in. Like I'll see a building on the street and fall in love with the windows, say, and I'll just literally start drawing one of the windows and it'll just expand from there onto the page.
In pen or pencil?
In pen. No, I don't
have... straight in?
Yeah, no, like that's what I kind of try and teach when we're doing drawing. Yeah. You know, there's no mistakes and don't bring an eraser. Just kind of get... If you really hate it, just start another one. You know?
Yeah.
It's paper and pens are cheap. Just enjoy it. And the mistakes say a lot about the moment in time that you drew. You know, there's a lot of information in getting things wrong. I think it's quite interesting. If you want to get it perfect, just take a photo. You know,
sure.
You don't need to stand there drawing something perfect. We've got that.
And how do you then transfer that digitally?
Yeah, so normally I'll draw it in pen and then just scan it in and then use a Wacom tablet to colour it in behind.
And Illustrator, is that the main?
Photoshop,
yeah.
Yep. But it's super basic. I do a lot of screen printing, so I just keep it in, it's like two layers literally. It's like the colour layer and the ink layer on top and that's it.
Oh, cool.
There's no like fancy Photoshop stuff.
So then you do screen printing as well?
Yeah, so sometimes I'll break the image down into colours, which is easy because they're all separated. Yep. You just have the black layer, and then if it's one or two colours, you separate them out and print the film out and make the screen.
You're listening to The Chat on 2SER 107.3. My name is Leah Summerglue, and I'm talking to illustrator James Gulliver Hancock.
Seems like you're very attracted to those particular styles of houses, the really ornate Victorian details. Mm. Is that something like, do you reckon from your childhood growing up in Balmain? There are some terraces around there.
Yeah.
That you...
Yeah, and everyone's done a share house in a terrace at some point, it feels like, infested with cockroaches or not, you know. And they're beautiful. All the ironwork that's got all those little patterns that are, like I said, all different to each one and that kind of layout. I mean, it was interesting in New York getting to know brownstones and how they work and how they were originally one family and then got split up and now they've got these weird sort of railroad apartments that don't have any hallways and stuff.
Yeah.
There's all this sort of reuse that's kind of interesting of those spaces too.
And is it something also to do with the symmetry that you're attracted to? Do you like
maybe repetition and stuff?
With symmetry?
Because
I've noticed that with your...
More repetition, I think.
Repetition.
Like the fact you go to a street and there's like dig, 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 dig next to each other, you know. And same in England, my auntie lives on a street that's exactly the same houses for, 500 metres or whatever. It's I like that somehow. It's sort of some sort of fractal or something, you know.
Oh, so you like that. So you kind of like the, I guess.
I like to draw it. I don't know
like
whether I like it.
Yeah, what do you
to
think
interact
about
with
that?
It as a person in a city, you know.
Yeah. Or even live like...
Yeah, it's very strange walking down. It's like you're in
Inception
or something. You know, it's like this sort of folded onto itself of all these. You sort of lose direction quite easily because there's no landmarks and stuff.
Of course. So tell me a little bit about the commercial work that you've done. You've worked for the New York Times, eBay and PayPal, Sydney Opera House, Coca-Cola.
Lots of people.
Yeah, lots of people. Has there been a highlight in any of the commercial stuff that you've worked with?
I'm talking about a job in a lecture today here at UTS about one of the early bigger jobs I got for Herman Miller. They wanted to do a book talking about how to use buildings or how to build buildings in a way that could be more flexible. And it was really like a university brief, and you don't get those very often. You know, they came to me with like a few sentences and were like, yeah, just play with this idea and let's see what happens. You know, they really gave me not very much to go on. And I really got to have fun with it. It was great. It was architecture-based, so I was drawing buildings and stuff, which I liked.
Yeah.
A lot of collage and a lot of, just collating funny drawings that I'd made. And we back and forthed a lot, and they made, like, a library out of it. It was really cute.
That's awesome. So it was kind of like a how to build...
Yeah, it was like a
building. Like
a manual for a new way of making buildings that are adaptable to change.
Wow.
Yeah. And Herman, I was just so excited to get a brief from Herman Miller, which are, the Eames chairs we all know and love.
Yeah,
and
of course.
Just such a famous company that you respect. It's nice to do stuff for people like that.
Is there a dream client? Apart from, I guess that, is there someone else that you, somewhere that you'd love to get published or work with someone?
Well, I hate to say, about the buildings, not being able to choose a favourite, but it's same with clients.
Yeah.
I just love pretty much whatever comes in, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, from like a tiny indie book brief to a massive multinational, they're all sort of similar in a way, and that's an interesting exploration every time.
And how does it work? Do you have like a, I guess, an agent or something like that, or is it all just through you?
No, I have an agent in Melbourne, the Jackie Winter Group, they help out with a bunch of stuff, which is good. Usually the bigger things, because it's, you know, the big guys like to have their massive contracts. And
you've got to negotiate all things. A lot.
Yeah, so it can be better to have someone in your court, which is nice.
Of course. And you've worked a bit in animation. How does that differ to illustration? Obviously, still images,
yeah,
moving
just
images.
Yeah, making them move, yeah. I mean, I don't do too much.
Did you have to
I learn? Used to do it. I did it in uni, and when I came straight out of UTS, I did a bunch, you know, using After Effects and different things to make little worlds that you could make things move through and stuff. And I kind of got to a point where it was, I realized I couldn't put enough effort into making it amazing. You know, you had to sort of to take it to the next level. I would have had to learn almost coding to get After Effects to be amazing.
Yeah, it's quite time consuming as well, more so.
Yeah, and I like the time consuming aspect of it, and I still do some really rudimentary animation just for like sharing on Instagram and stuff, where I'll do draw each of the frames and make them animate. But yeah, just making, like, you know, you could make a leaf curl up or something, and you draw 10 frames of that just by hand, and watching all your drawings to go back and forth is quite fun. But
really?
Yeah, the high-end stuff, we usually get other people to animate it now, which is
helpful.
Amazing too. Yeah, it's it's exciting, you know. You do all these drawings, you make all these assets for the animator, and you give them over, and it comes back, and it's all alive. It's sort of,
that's pretty
great.
Good.
Yeah.
Tell me about your book, The Travel Bug, which you released earlier this year in January. How did it come about? Did you illustrate it, or did you also come up with the concept and write it?
At the beginning, I had this idea. I was doing these drawings while I was traveling of bits and pieces that I saw in each country, like coffee cups in Vienna and, you know, croissants in Paris or whatever, and they would all be sort of mashed together in different scales. So I started coming up with this idea of these little creatures that could be of weird scale, you know, like, and bugs are obviously quite small, so they came about. But yeah, there'd be like a big croissant and a little bug, and then maybe a tiny Eiffel Tower and a big bus, you know, everything was sort of a bit up and down. So I came to a friend of mine who I knew was a writer, and he overnight wrote this beautiful rhyming story to go with this vague concept I had, and that bounced back to me, and I got excited and just punched the whole book out, and we got Penguin Random House onto it and
lovely
put it out.
That's
it was really
good.
Fun.
What's the book about?
It's about a little bug that goes traveling around the world. He doesn't know who he is, and he kind of asks all these different bugs in different countries around the world where he fits in, and nobody knows, and there's a resolution at the end.
That's lovely. We won't give it away. And you've got a son, right?
Yeah, a 5-year-old son and a 1-year-old daughter.
Oh, and a 1-year-old daughter. Yeah. Do they like the book?
Yeah, he loves it. She's a bit little, but she loves anything. But he loves it. Yeah, he's picking out little details, and it's just natural for him. Like, I remember when he was born, he wouldn't sleep very well, so I had him in the carrier quite a lot, and I did a whole book while he was in the carrier, you know, like,
wow,
because you can get quite a lot done when they're quite small because they sleep a lot, and it's harder when they're toddlers, actually. I think he wasn't, you know, you expect him to go, wow, that's amazing, you made this book. My wife does that, but he's like, yeah, you made another book. That's great. You know, what's the next one going to be? It's you know, it's just natural that that's what I do. I do drawings all the time. And
I reckon later on he'll understand the brevity of the whole thing.
Sure.
Is he a drawer?
Yeah, he loves it. I love his drawings too. We collaborate a lot. He's just
amazing.
So free, you know. He just doesn't need. Oh, it's getting a bit now. He's at school. He wants to be able to do this or that. Whereas just before he'd just draw for the fun of it, you know. You don't need to draw the car perfect. You don't need to draw the person perfect. It's just getting down stuff that feels good to get it down, and I love that. I need to practice that more, you know. So having him around is awesome.
Yeah, it'd be good to, like, learn from that as well, like relearning, I guess. And do you spend most of your time in Sydney, or you seem to be travelling a lot?
Yeah, not as much as we did. We used to travel all the time, me and my wife, and lived in a lot of different countries around the world. But, yeah, now mostly it's here and back and forth to different places if work gets me to do that, which is nice. It's nice to be able to travel and work. That was kind of the end goal for career.
Absolutely. And tell me about the residency that you're doing. Is it just for August, I think, at
Rose Sidler? Yeah.
How did that come about?
I just met the lady that runs Sydney Living Museums, and we got on really well. She saw my Sydney book, and a lot of their properties that they manage are in the book. So they wanted to do something with me, and we sort of brainstormed a few things. And this idea came up where I go there every Sunday and try and just communicate everything that's at the house. So I'm just drawing everything, really. And people come and we have a chat, and there's lots of helpers there. So they have lots of information. So you can be drawing like a teacup, and they'll come over and give you this long monologue about what the significance of a teapot or whatever.
That's awesome.
It was interesting. Like, they were telling me a story. Seidler was really, anal about the house. And it was for his mum, and his mum moved in, and he was like, you can't bring the old Viennese china, and he made her get rid of it. But she couldn't get rid of the teapot, so she hid it in a cupboard whenever he came around. That sounds like a bit of a nightmare, but it's funny.
He was very specific about things and where they're placed. Yeah. How did it go yesterday? What did you draw?
It was great. I did lots of outside stuff. I even got into the hill soist and stuff. I love that there's this perfect modernist house, but there's still the hill soist, and there's still a crappy tap and stuff. But yeah, getting into the cutlery and the crockery and the chairs, there's all Eames chairs and original butterfly chairs and stuff. They're all there, and just they're so fun to draw because they're such curvy, interesting shapes. And I think being in a museum context is great because there's no clutter again. It's just the chair is sitting there on this beautiful piece of carpet, and it's right next to a perfect vase of lilies and stuff. It's quite set up. And people came and drew with me too, and
that's nice.
That's the point, to people to come and interact. And
do you yourself sort of feel a bit like a museum piece though?
Oh, within that context? No,
people
I think
sort of
I'm making it quite casual.
Shoulder.
My attitude's pretty relaxed, So I think if I wasn't there, when I've been there just to visit, it feels a bit like you're on eggshells, It's like, don't touch this, don't sit here. Whereas I'm just sort of hanging out, and I do lean on a wall and draw, and I think that makes people a bit more...
They can touch
feels
the wall.
A little bit more lived in, maybe 5% more lived in.
Have you done anything like this before?
I mean, I've done artist in residence before, where you go to a country and stay in a place and make your own artwork.
Though.
But this is quite,
it's very different,
relevant to the context, which is it's great. I'd like to do more of it. It's fun. I mean, I'd love to be actually in residence. That'd be amazing.
Oh my god, that would be ideal.
Because that, getting thrown in, even if you just were in a little annex or something next to it, just because then you're like in it all day, every day, and living the feeling would be interesting.
You can be like, just give me the shed. I'll just stay in the shed.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Totally.
I'd love to stay. What are you working on after your residency and for the rest of the year?
All sorts of things.
Yep.
I did a book for Lonely Planet a while ago, which was fold-out book for kids about how cities work. So that was the first sort of paper-engineered folding book I'd done.
Beautiful.
And that was all sort of growth of cities and cities of the future and stuff. So quite, again, little detailed educational drawings.
And can, just to clarify, by paper-engineered, you mean sort of pop-up?
It wasn't pop-up, but flaps mainly.
Flaps.
So gatefolds come out and then another flap comes out of that. So once you folded it out, it kind of does look like a pop-up, but... so we're doing another one of those. That's kicking off right now, actually. So that'll be interesting. Another one in that series.
That was James Gulliver Hancock, who is an illustrator and the artist in residence this month at Rose Seidler House. That's all for the chat this week. If you like the show, you can subscribe to our podcast via SoundCloud or iTunes, or from our website, which is 2ser.com/thechat. The show is produced with the support of the University of Technology Sydney and 2SER 107.3. I'm Leah Summerglue, and I'll catch you next week.